my name is John Leslie, and as I've explained in the past on our program, that if you have been a radio or television listener, excuse me, reviewer over the years, you know me as John Leslie. If you are a family member or a friend, you know me as Jan Kokachak. So I go by two different names. It really makes it complicated. But, well, for now, because it's broadcast, we'll stick with John Leslie. And I want to say hello to a gentleman who has an intimate knowledge of an area where I worked back in the early 80s. And my daughter has studied there. And I want to welcome Warren Garling to our program. Warren, hi.
Hi, how you doing this morning?
I'm doing well. You are in the what's called the Capital District of New York.
Yes. Yep, and if you want to get even fancier, it's the Capital Region. You know, if you want to go with some of the outlying, you know, areas as well. But yeah, upstate New York, Capital District, Albany, Schenectady, Troy are the three major markets here, if you will.
I was thinking about it this morning that as we, it's kind of an unknown major radio market. If you go out to California and talk about the Capital District or Capital Region of New York, they would shrug and say, "So what? I mean, what is that?"
Right.
And people in Chicago don't know what that is, but we do, because it's not just those three communities that you mentioned, but the near proximity of Vermont and Massachusetts, and of course New York State, it provides a huge radio audience.
Absolutely, yeah, and even though the market size, if you look at Nielsen now and how they rank these things, has actually shrunk over the years. Like when I started in 1969, we were the 45th market in the country, and now it's down to like 67 or 68. But the population has pretty much, you know, stayed the same in that time, if not, you know, grown a little bit. Obviously, you know, being down in Florida, you've probably got more New Yorkers living there than we do up here.
That's true enough. And people also don't realize, Warren, that there was the Capital District of, or the Capital Region of New York, was the original home of General Electric.
Right.
And so there was a huge General Electric presence there, not only in manufacturing, but back in a time when Westinghouse was busy doing their electronics or electric work, Westinghouse put a 50,000-watt radio station on the air in Pittsburgh, KDKA.
Right.
And KDKA was the very first commercial radio broadcasting station in the United States. And if I'm not mistaken, when General Electric put its radio station on the air, WGY, I believe it was like the second or third commercial.
Probably was. It just celebrated 100 years last year. It was 1922 when it went on the air. And as an aside, they did a reproduction of a play that was produced live on the air back in 1922, and I got a chance to actually be on that broadcast.
Really?
last January, February, I guess it was, yeah. And what a kick! It was really kind of brought my career full circle, because I really thought that I've always thought in my life that if I had been born about maybe 20 or 30 years earlier, I would have been a great radio actor. I love acting, but I hate memorizing. So to have the script in front of me, whoa, you know? And so I got a chance to play at that just over a year ago, and it was quite a celebration here. The local museum had a big display of all the stuff relating to 100 years of WGY. So, it was a pretty big deal.
Well, back in the early 80s, I had the opportunity to be part of that. I did the morning show on WGY, and I'll tell you, there is nothing like opening the microphone and knowing that there are about 3 million people listening.
Yeah. And you weren't just talking sometimes, especially early in the morning, you were talking to many states, not just here in the Northeast, but at nighttime, WGY can be heard in close to 30 states. That's the 50,000 watts of clear channel they've got. And so it's always been, they're always hearing from folks in other parts of the country saying they've picked them up and listened to them.
We, of course, in our day-to-day broadcasting, we targeted our metropolitan audience. You know, we knew that we were booming into North Carolina and into Canada, but it was smart programming to target your local audience. However, on Sunday mornings, and yes, I had to work Sunday mornings, even though I was a big deal morning guy. In fact, I had to come in an hour early on Sunday, so I was there. I was there at 5, and but I did dedicate that first hour, 5 to 6, on Sunday morning, particularly in the wintertime when the radio signals really travel. I dedicated that to DXing or long distance listening. And I invited people to call me from wherever they were. And there were a few that jumped out. There was a guy who was delivering newspapers in Charlotte, North Carolina. And he said, I listen every Sunday morning. And I'm delivering the Charlotte news, whatever, newspaper. And he said, I listen to you every morning. And I thought, how cool is that? You know, we're going to get back. I want to get specifically, Warren, to your background, but one other thing that happened there at WGY, there are a lot of things that happened to WGY, but one of them was I started getting communications from Europe. And I thought, man, we got a big signal, bigger than I thought. Well, as it turned out, Armed Forces Radio is not on the air all the time. But Armed Forces Radio uses satellites, and part of what their European service is they would provide certain programming from the United States, and I don't know how that was picked up. But people are not aware that when there is no programming, these satellites don't just float around up there silent. The engineers and the technicians need to know that those satellites are working.
Sure.
So they have audio on there all the time. And they selected my program, the morning show on WGY.
Pretty neat.
To put up on the satellite. And so all of the U.S. Armed Forces in Europe who had their radios tuned to Armed Forces Radio, they were listening to WGY and all in Schenectady.
That's pretty sharp. Yeah. That's something that sticks with you.
Yeah. So tell us about you. You started. You've been a regular full time radio guy.
I have. I've done it both full time and part time. I did it full time only for about 17 years, John, because you may have run across this in your years on the radio. The pay was not always commensurate with living. Being able to afford food and the roof over the heads of the children and all that stuff. So I did get out of full-time radio after about 17 years, but I started very young. I saw my first station when I was 11 years old, and I have thanked a guy by the name of Harry Haynes for that all my life. Harry was an Air Force recruiter, of all things, but he had a 15-minute radio show Saturday mornings on WBNR in Beacon. And I was living outside of Newburgh at the time with my family, 11 years old. And he just asked my parents one day, hey, you think Warren would enjoy, seeing what the radio station's all about? Little did he know that after two visits with him on two different Saturday mornings, I would set my sights on radio and do it for a career starting at 16. I was just so enamored. And, it wasn't so much, it wasn't very glamorous. He took me to this place on a hill where the transmitter was and the tower was. And it was just a small little shack. But I get in this studio, and I'm thinking, all that sound out there is coming from this little spot here. And then these two, I think maybe even three turntables. I think he still had one for transcriptions. This is 1963, 64.
Well, he would have, Yeah.
So I don't remember seeing like a cart machine, but I may not have just remembered that. But I really think all the spots were on transcriptions, and it was just a kick, and just it was the control board and the dials moving and the lights flashing and the stuff like that that I thought, wow, this would be pretty neat, you know. And you know, I followed the path from there.
We're talking with Warren Garling in the Capital Region of New York. We're talking about radio, and I've got to tell you, Warren, I did a program on WBNR.
Did you really?
I did.
Small world.
Yeah, I was not in the studio there. They picked up my syndicated program.
How about that?
I was trying to launch, after I left my morning show, on WNBF in Binghamton, New York. I retired from that, and the reason I retired was because of ownership changes, and you know how that goes.
Oh, yeah.
And so I decided to try my hand at a syndicated Saturday morning radio program. I identified that a need to have an entertaining Saturday morning radio program. So it was called World Radio Weekend. And it was World Radio Weekend.
Now you never fumbled on that World Radio Weekend?
No, I probably did. I did just now. I couldn't find a jingle company to sing the name. But anyhow, the owners of WBNR at that time. And this would have been 1996, so that was a long time after you were there. But,
oh, sure, yeah.
But the owners of WBNR also owned WENE in Endicott and another station there. And they said, hey, we'll jumpstart your syndicated program. We'll put it on all of the stations that we own, which was two. And and I had a producer, a studio engineer, and we had writers, and they were making money, and I wasn't. So after about, I'm guessing, maybe a year or 2 years, World Radio Weekend went into the dustbin of history. But I was on WBNR in Beacon. And
that is crazy. We have a saying here. We actually call Albany, the capital of New York, we actually call it Smallbany, because it's amazing how far away from here you can be, and you'll run into somebody that has a connection here, or that, you know, and sometimes not even go too far. Sometimes just, where was I just recently and ran into somebody that knew somebody that I just never expected the connection. I forget the story. But anyway, we tell Smallbany stories all the time. And there's another, because, I mean, for you to have your syndicated thing on the, you know, program on WBNR, which is where I, you know, got my love for radio, is just, that's just too crazy. Yeah. I'm sorry.
Now, when you left WBNR, and when I saw when I was, it was a house.
They were
in a house. And, boy, I can't remember the program director's name, but he left there and went up to Poughkeepsie and worked at a group there. And there's another story connected with that, but this is your time, so I'm not gonna wear you out with that. So when you left BNR, then what happened?
Well, you know, again, I only went there twice to see the radio station and enjoyed it. And so I went home and started thinking about ways to pretend I was on the radio. And my parents helped me out and bought me a couple of little kits that I could, you know, broadcast through. We finally moved from a trailer that we lived in Walden, outside of Newburgh, and we moved back up here. I was born in Schenectady, so we wound up back in the area in our first home, and we had a full basement all finished off, and I commandeered the built-in desk down there, and I built WSCO radio which stood for Scotia, which was the mailing address we had there. And I got a little Lafayette quarter-watt transmitter that I had plugged in downstairs in the basement, and it broadcast all the way upstairs to the kitchen so my mother could listen. She was one of my first fans, yeah. And so I did that, and I also had the luck of learning about a high school internship program at the local station in Schenectady, WSNY, 1240 at the time. And I started going in my ninth grade year of school. I started going every Friday afternoon for just a couple of hours and learning about radio from the inside. And they had guys in, and girls in there every afternoon for just a couple of hours from local area junior and senior high schools. And so I did that for a few months, and it was supposed to end when summertime came, and I just kept going. I just thought, you know, I'm not going to stop until they tell me I can't come here. Well, they changed formats, and so they went from probably easy listening MOR type music to top 40. So I'm thrilled, but that's when they said that we don't need these kids hanging around here anymore. So they started telling us all we couldn't hang around. So I just kept in touch with people there. And you know how they say it's not what you know, it's who you know?
Absolutely.
I kept in touch. Yep, I kept in touch with the 7 to Midnight guy, called him nightly, won a couple of contests, you know, a 45 RPM record or something exciting like that. And we became friends. He knew me immediately when I would call him up on the phone. 1 week, he calls me, and I tell this story, by the way. I wrote a memoir a few years ago when I retired from full-time work called I'll Have to Ask My Mom, because when he calls me one Thursday after my junior year of high school had finished, in June of 1969, he said, I was supposed to get the weekend off. The boss forgot to get somebody to fill in for me. Can you come in this weekend and do two overnight shifts for me? And, you know, I said, well, I'll have to ask my mom. I wasn't driving yet, you know. And he said, I just talked to your mom, because I was babysitting at my cousin's house. And I tell this story again in my book, I'll Have to Ask My Mom. But anyway, long story short, I go in for that weekend, do the 6 hours one night, 7 hours the next. And by the way, this is the weekend that my high school girlfriend was graduating. And I was a year behind her in school, and so I had to fit her graduation and graduation party in between my two overnight shifts.
Oh, boy.
But we made it work, yeah. And it turns out that the boss, the program director there, a guy by the name of Don DeRosa, heard me, you know, listened to see what I was like. And because I was the responsibility of the guy that, you know, brought me in there, he said, if this kid doesn't work out, you're gone, you know. So he took a big chance to bring me in. Anyway, bottom line is that the next Monday morning, I get a call from Don DeRosa, and he says, hey, can you do 3 to 7 this summer while you're off from college? And I said, 3 to 7 on a rock and roll top 40 station, and I'm 16 years old. I said, yeah, I think so.
Yeah, I think
how much
I'll
do I have to pay you? Yeah. How much do I have to pay you, sort of thing, you know, which is almost what he paid me. You know, but the bottom line was I didn't care if I got paid at all. I was everything I had worked for years in that basement radio station, you know, was coming true for me.
Isn't it amazing how many people in our business that you talk to, their careers started kind of that way?
Yeah.
And it was the same with me. I was born and raised in Weirton, West Virginia, a steel town in the shadow of Pittsburgh, in the northern panhandle of West Virginia. I grew up listening to KDKA and KQV in Pittsburgh. But my local hometown station, WEIR, was very influential in the community. Everybody listened to it.
Nice.
It was on in the barber shops. It was on, you know, people had it on in their cars. They wanted to know what the stock for the steel production was. They, you know, and so it was all of the local celebrities, all of the local announcers were celebrities, and I wanted to get on there. And like you, I had my little transmitter, only it would get out to about four houses, so I was programming to the girl up the street. You know, every song that I played or everything that I said was dedicated to her.
Sure.
By name.
That's good.
So I was in a Catholic high school, and so we were at a pep rally one. I mean, how serendipitous is this? We're in a pep rally, and all of the students are there. And, of course, a Catholic pep rally isn't quite as raucous as one in a public school. But and we also had to, you know, pray for victory. And the principal, Sister Adelaide William, who had this really unusual, like, duck-like walk, came all the way across the gymnasium, waded into the crowd where I was sitting, and I thought, man, what did I do now?
Yeah.
And so she gets up to me, and she says, Jan, the radio station wants a spotter for their football broadcast. You want to do it?
Wow.
I said, what?
Yeah, right.
And so I started with Harry Beck and Sam Wellington traveling to all of the football games as their spotter. What the spotter is as they're doing play-by-play, it's my job to look down on the field and identify who made the tackle or the pass or the whatever.
Right.
And then I would point to their name on a paper, on a page,
sure,
so that they would know who it was. Well, I walked into that spotting job, and 56 years later, I retired from the broadcasting business.
There you go. That's all it took. Yeah, yeah. Well, I'll always remember Don DeRosa for being a guy that just took a chance on a 16-year-old kid. I got to work the summer of 69. We're talking the moon landing. I was on the air the night that the men walked on the moon for the first time, and that's gotten me notoriety on the 50th anniversary a year or two back. God, it's 4 years ago now. Anyway, I remember I'd been getting newspapers called me when they knew that I was on the air that night. I was actually on one of the local news stations here talking about my memories of that night. So you never know where it might come back, either to haunt you or to make you popular again.
That's right.
Yeah. Well, so it was just a great time to start in radio. I'm sure you'd agree that, I mean, the top 40 radio in the late 60s into the 70s was just, it was the place to be, or at least for me to start.
Well, we all of us in the business and of that age and of that era, we all listened to those faraway stations.
We listened
to WLS and CHUM in Toronto and WOWO in Fort Wayne and WLS, I guess I mentioned that. And we listened to those guys and we said, oh, man, to be one of them.
Exactly.
And how good they, how good are they?
You know? Exactly. Yeah, yeah.
So how do they do that? You know, I thought I make mistakes all the time when I get on the air. And you listen to them and you don't hear mistakes.
No, you don't. No, it's phenomenal. Some of the people, you know, we listen to, like Larry Lou Jack and those types of guys, it was just amazing how smooth it was and how it sounded, rehearsed, but yet it didn't. You know, you knew it was off the cuff. I've got some air checks. You know, out of the 50 years of air checks I have, I've had a couple where, you know, lightning struck and I, you know, broke up, you know, not only the listeners, but after I turned the mic off, broke myself up. You know, where did that come from, you know? Yeah, exactly. And you know, you just get these inspirations now and again that that turn out to be great memories. So
we're talking with Warren Garling, and we're talking about radio, of course. That's the name of the program. It's interesting that throughout, I worked in a lot of markets. I worked in Syracuse, worked in Des Moines, worked in Kansas City, and I was always my biggest critic. We did very well. I've got to tell you that we did really, really well at those stations. But I would listen to my air checks, and I would say, oh, you could have done that so much better.
Oh, yeah.
Or why do people think you're so good? You're not so good.
Exactly.
And however, after we moved to Florida in early 2000, and I had really separated myself completely from any commercial radio, somewhere I dragged out a cassette because I had thrown away almost all of the cassettes.
Oh.
Yeah. My daughter said, "You did." I said, "Did you want them?" And she said, "Well, no." But I had this one from WGY, and it was my morning show on WGY, and I don't remember, it was a Sunday, I guess it must have been, because I said, you know, a lot of people, I have to work on Sunday, and I'm sure a lot of people have to work on Sunday. And so I started getting calls, and as you know, that district up there where you are is a big, big dairy country.
Yes.
And it turned into, if you're out milking the cows, call me. And the phones just didn't stop.
There you go.
I swear that every dairy farmer in the Northeast was listening and was calling in from the barn, and you could hear the cows mooing in the background. And so I'm listening to this tape. We're sitting in Florida, and I'm listening to the tape, and I said to my wife, "How good is that?" I said, "For once in my life, I think I rose to the occasion."
There you go. There you go. Now we have, well, you all have some great, you know, memories like that. But and it's really why, again, we haven't talked about this yet, but I do my own podcast interviewing some of the past. I call it interviews with broadcast veterans of the past and sometimes present. Some of them are still working. Some of them are folks that are maybe just a little younger than me, so they made their mark more in the 80s and 90s than they did in the 60s and 70s like I did. But I do that a monthly podcast, and there's, without exception, all I have to do, and I'm sure you found this to be the same thing, is just ask a question. And luckily, I've got a professional talker at the other end, and I just shut up and let them talk, you know. But we have great conversations, very much like what we're doing right here. So I have done like 18 of these. I call it from the Radio Split Ranch because remember Radio Ranch? I think it was a movie that Gene Autry did. He was broadcasting from the Radio Ranch, and I woke up one morning and I thought, well, I live in a split ranch. Maybe this could be the Radio Split Ranch. And it caught on, you know. So, but I've got these guys on, and you worked with some of them. You worked with Bob Cudmore, right?
Oh, yeah. I'm looking through this. Bob Cudmore, Jack Arnicky, great guy, Jack Arnicky.
Absolutely.
I know, let me see here. I know Joe Gallagher. I know Buzz Brindle.
Yeah. Doc Perryman, was he done by the time you got there? He used to do a jazz show on GY, but he may have been.
No, he was there. Yes, yes.
Okay.
He did all night. He was on all nights.
Yes. Yep. Exactly.
Now, I didn't remember him because I didn't, I never came in contact with him. But it's interesting that my daughter, Chris Duffy, is the president of SUNY Adirondack. And somehow Doc Perryman did something for SUNY Adirondack, or there was some way that my daughter came in contact with him.
That's crazy.
And she said, "Well, my dad did the morning show on WGY," and he said, "Oh, I know, you know." And Walt Fritz.
Oh, sure.
He's been on Radio Split Ranch.
Yeah. Yes, he has. Yeah. Yeah. He and Doc were two people I worked with at WSNY in the summer of 69. Doc was doing overnights, and Walt was doing afternoon, midday. I would take over for him at 3 o'clock in the afternoon all that summer. So they're my oldest friends, radio friends, if you will. And we actually have lunch about every other month. We get together and have what we call the Louie lunch. It was named after a guy that worked at WGY and got fired from there. And he decided he didn't want to leave his friends behind. So he started a group that anybody that ever got fired from WGY could come to this lunch. And needless to say, it grew over the years. And so we've just turned it in. We still call it the Louie Lunch, but we've just turned it into anybody that's been on radio or TV locally that wants to join us. And we've got probably about 40 people that I get in touch with every month, and we get 15 to 20 that come to the lunch. So it's just great. And we've lost a few along the way, but we've made great friends, and all of us have something in common, and you know, it's usually broadcast, and usually we've crossed paths somewhere at one of the radio stations in the market.
We're talking about radio with Warren Garling. He's located in the Capital Region of New York, Albany, New York. We'd mentioned WGY, which was physically located in Schenectady. Was it Niskayuna, really?
Yes. For many years, it was in Niskayuna. It's now in Latham, not too far from Balltown Road in Niskayuna, where the studios were. And then now it's part of Clear Channel, iHeart Media. Yeah, sorry about that. Where I worked, I can give you the quick version of the career if you want, and get you right to where I worked in the same building with Joe Gallagher and a few of the other guys that are still over there. After I went to college, I went to a little school in Boston called Graham Junior College. Don't know if you ever heard of it or not, but you've heard of some of the graduates, people like Andy Kaufman and Mark Summers, who's big on the Food Network and did Double Dare for many years. My boys grew up watching my old college friend on TV. My first roommate, my first semester of this little college in Kenmore Square in Boston, was a guy by the name of Paul Fusco, and he created ALF for NBC, which was a big hit for about 3 years or 4 years on TV on NBC. Just a very funny, creative guy, as you can tell by the show. And so we, there's a bunch of others, a few that went on to start ESPN, others that started satellite networks. So we had some real sharp people come through there, people that worked at WABC and WCBS and things like that. So I came home after college, a couple of years in Boston, and went to work at a small station in Saratoga, which led to a bigger station in Troy and then Albany. We signed on, 50 years ago this December, we signed on the number one station in town right now, and it has been for many, many years, WGNA, which is a country station, has been since this fall of 73. And so I helped sign the station on as a newsman, and then decided I needed to get back into jockeying, so I did that. Went away to Tupelo, Mississippi for a year.
Oh, boy.
There's a book in itself, but I won't go deep into that. It was an old college roomie of mine that brought me down there. And then actually came back to WGNA and wound up becoming the program director. And then you mentioned about stations changing hands. That's what forced my hand in 1986 on my son's seventh birthday. The guy I'd been working for 10 of or 9 of the last 10 years said, you were going to let you go. And I'm thinking, oh, okay, I wonder what I did. And I found out later I didn't do anything. He was putting the station up for sale, and I was making the most money besides he and the sales manager, obviously. And so so they made the bottom line look better. And my wife doesn't remember saying this to me, but I remember her saying, well, maybe there's something else out there besides radio that that you could get into and enjoy. And I had another 17-year career in the marketing and sales that helped pay for the retirement I'm enjoying right now, because, as I say, wasn't making great money in radio. When I left radio in 86, my annual salary was $17,000.
What year was
programming,
that?
That was 1986, and I was programming equivalent to a 50,000-watt FM station that was heard in parts of 5 states. And eventually, it wasn't number one under my reign, but within a few years after I left, maybe that was the problem, it became the number one station in town and has held that title for, the last 25, 30 years. Anyway, I find out that, I guess I might be able to do other stuff. My dad was a salesman most of his life. And so I got into marketing for professional services, and then worked for a company that did marketing materials for CPAs and banks and trust companies and stuff like that. Worked for them traveling the country and just had a ball doing that. But after about a year and a half off the air full time, I said, I missed this too much. And I said to my wife, if I could work just a Saturday morning shift You know, my weekend would start at 10 o'clock or something like that, you know, with you guys. You know, we had two boys at the time. She said, yeah, go ahead. I know how much you miss it. And so I worked for from 1988 until 2020, just before the pandemic, when iHeartMedia let me go. And I retired full time from the radio business. But I did, as I said, sales, marketing. I also worked the last 10 years of my career teaching folks how to be voice actors.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. There are some voice actors out there reading audiobooks and doing commercials that I trained over the 10 years that I worked for a company called Voice Coaches here in Albany. And so I had a ball doing that, and I was doing their marketing at the same time, so that that kept me busy. Retired from there in 2017, and then again forcefully retired thanks to cutbacks at iHeart back in 2020, just before the lockdown, which would have probably been the end of my career anyway, the way things were working with COVID.
Well, the one thing that stood between me and a successful voiceover career was the voice acting. I've got the voice. I don't have the acting. I did a lot of over the years. I did a lot of voiceover work. I did some TV motion picture voiceover. I did some national commercials, international commercials. They were few and far between. But I would get them here and there, you know, a couple of $100 and then maybe a big hit for $1,000 and so on. And I knew the reason that I wasn't getting the gigs, because I'm the guy who was in news for so many years, and then I'm the freewheeling morning guy for so many years. So here I am sitting here submitting an audition for a voice acting job with my hand behind my ear. You know. You know,
well,
and that doesn't cut it.
No. But I'll tell you, I'm still making money that way. I still do voice work on the side. I've got four or five regular clients. I really don't market myself much. I'll get a call out of the blue now and again. But the folks I do the work for is just enough to keep me, you know, off the couch now and again and behind the microphone. So that's how I. You know, that and the monthly podcast interviews that I do, it keeps me busy enough, and it's enough of a challenge that I still enjoy it. I've led a charmed life, to be honest with you. I can't think of almost a day that I did not enjoy getting up and going to do my work. The most enjoyable times were when it was at a radio station. That's just... Yeah, that's in the blood, and as you know, it's very hard to get it out of your blood once it's in your stream.
Well, now I know how I found Radio Split Ranch. I just entered that name in Google, and Google took me right to it.
There you go. Good. I appreciate that.
So,
thank you, Google.
Yeah. So, folks, if you'd like to listen to some of these great interviews with some of the great radio stars of the capital region of New York, which is a great radio market. Give it a search in Google, Radio Split Ranch, Radio Split Ranch. And you mentioned, Warren, that you had written a book early on called, I Have to Ask My Mother.
I'll Have to Ask My Mom, yep. It's available through, it's available through Amazon Books, Amazon.com. And also I did an audio version that you actually might enjoy, because I included air checks from my career throughout the audiobook version. So you get to, when I talk about being, you know, 16 and on the radio, you get to actually hear a little bit about, you know, what I sounded like at the time. And it follows, it's just the full-time career. So it's just the first 17 years, and really concentrating mostly on stories of how I got started and the fun that I had. And I'm working on a sequel, but it's not half as much fun as the first one was. So I don't know if it'll ever happen, but, yeah, when I need something to do, I just pick it up again and, you know, add to the page count. But it was a lot of fun looking back, and I really only planned on doing it for the family. I thought, you know, my family and folks that follow me down the road, you know, maybe there'll be some great-grandchildren might say, I wonder what great-grandpa did. You know, that I thought that I would just share it with the family. And then I had enough that I thought, well, I guess I could go on and actually self-publish the thing, and it worked out. Have you ever thought of doing something like that yourself? Have you put it to paper?
It has crossed my mind, and I can't tell you how many people have said to me that I should write my memoirs. Radio has taken me all over the world. I spent a period of about 10, almost 12 years traveling back and forth to the Soviet Union, doing broadcasts from there back when we thought they were going to be our friends.
Wow.
And I've broadcasted from England, from Ireland, four or five times, from Kathmandu, Nepal, up on Mount Everest.
My goodness. Well, there's certainly some stories that you should put to paper. And it's for the same reason that I'm getting these guys to sit here at the Radio Split Ranch. I don't want these stories to disappear. I just think radio has meant so much to so many over the years, and it kind of sad to see the way corporate has taken over, but it still means a lot to a lot of people, and sometimes it's their only lifeline, to the outside, between shut-ins and people that are, toward the end of life and don't get around much anymore. Radio is a companion. And so I've always thought that there should be a history of this, and since this area is so rife with broadcast history. I didn't even get to the point where I worked. I worked in public television for many years as well. That was in that mix between the late 1900s into the 2000s. But it's a history that I thought needed to be recorded, and so that's why I'm doing this. And it's an excuse to sit and laugh with friends.
Sounds great. We're talking with Warren Garling, and we're talking about radio, and we're getting pretty close to the end of our time here, but I am compelled to tell you another story about WGY. And you had mentioned people who got fired, and when I was there, there was only one person that was fired, and I'm not going to mention his name because anybody who knows will know who I'm talking about. But he, too, wrote a book. He did an evening talk show on WGUI. You know what? How much better could that be? He was on like from 8 to midnight, a 4-hour air shift. So he had the night hours from 10 to midnight to get that signal out there. And it was a classic call-in radio talk show about today's topic. And this gentleman was very good at it. And he wrote a book called You're on Open Mic. And there was some reason that he had me. I think he was getting lazy, and he couldn't come up with guests. And he asked me if I would come in and into the studio and be a guest on his program. Well, I got to get up in the morning and do the morning show. But I wasn't going to pass up the opportunity to have the exposure. So I'm sitting in the studio with him, right? And you can always tell when the talk show phone rings because the host goes right after it. Our phones are ringing now. And he went to it. And the guy said, hey, Bill, I read your book. And I said, so you're the one.
Perfect. Absolutely.
But anyhow, in conclusion to that story, this guy, this host, the general manager of the station's name was Randy Baumgarten, and Randy went on to become president of NBC Radio. And so Randy was not in sales, but he had a few accounts, or at least was in some way connected to some accounts that went on the air. And he was listening specifically that night, a night, to the talk show to hear this particular spot. And he didn't hear it. He didn't hear it.
Oh, boy.
And so the next day, he quietly went in and got the log, and it was, in fact, logged. It was on there, and it was checked off and timed. And so they initiated an investigation, and they went back 2 years. Mm. And they found hundreds and hundreds of the same thing.
Oh, boy.
And they confronted him with it, and he said, well, they were getting in my way, I've got this important talk show, and they were getting in my way, and of course, that was the end of his time. But to the station's credit, they went back to every one of those sponsors, offered a refund or make goods.
There you go.
That's the way you run the business.
That's the way you stay in business. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Well, Warren Garling, this has been great. I really enjoy these programs. I'm sure, as you do with Radio Split Ranch, we could go on forever and ever, but Mark Twain said it's a terrible death being talked to death. And we don't want to be responsible for that. But perhaps someday off in the future we could do Chapter 2. I guess that's a big thing now in podcasting is Chapter 2. I was reading and wherever I was reading it, which equals maybe you don't have another guest. So let's go back and get an earlier one, right?
Well, I've already got one picked out for mine. If you listen to the Brian Jackson interview I did a while back, Brian was both in radio and TV and owned radio station for a time. He finished our over an hour long interview with, well, that's part one, folks, because he's got so many stories he can tell. And most of us do. So he's already reserved, a part two with me. And so you're just exactly that. If I can't find somebody to do one month, I'm just going to call, Brian up because I know he can sit here and tell completely different stories and still make his laugh as loud. So.
Well, Warren, it has been great. I have enjoyed making a new friend here and you're so articulate. You're really, really fun to listen to.
Thank you.
We can hear the success in your voice and the enthusiasm is still there. At your age, what are you, about 96 now, I guess?
Yeah, that's how I feel some days. Yep.
Me too.
Radio will do that to you. I've got the phone in my right ear because I don't hear very well out of the left one anymore, and that's, of course, from wearing headphones for too many years. Yeah.
Okay, well, I'll be 76 in June, and I never thought, when I was 16 and trying to find bars that served underage, I never thought of about 76, but here it is.
Oh God! Oh no! No, yeah, exactly. I'm in my 70s as well, and never thought that. First of all, I'd still be, talking about the business, let alone, still being connected to it in some way. But that's the love of it. So, and Jan, okay, sorry about that. I didn't even get to the point where I talked about I was actually Chris Warren on the radio. I hardly ever used Warren Garling. That was my dad's name. So I used Chris Warren most of my career. But in any event, if we can find some time to do this again, I'd like to be on the recording end next time and hear a lot more about your overseas travels and such. So if you don't write the book, I'm going to do the interview, okay?
I hope so. Warren Garling, thank you very, very much for being with us on Talking About Radio.
My pleasure, John. Thank you.